On this edition for Saturday, June 6th, protests across the country and around the world as memorials for George Floyd continue. Next, PBS NewsHour Weekend.
PBS NewsHour Weekend is made possible by Bernard and Irene Schwartz, Sue and Edgar Wackenheim III, the Cheryl and Philip Milstein family, Rosalind P. Walter, Barbara Hope Zuckerberg, Charles Rosenblum. We try to live in the moment to not miss what's right in front of us. At Mutual of America, we believe taking care of tomorrow can help you make the most of today. Mutual of America Financial Group, retirement services and investments. Additional support has been provided by and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.
Good evening and thanks for joining us. On this second weekend after the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis, protesters and mourners gathered in large numbers all across the United States. In North Carolina, where Floyd was born, there was a memorial service with the public invited in the morning, followed by a private service for family and close friends this afternoon. Floyd's body will be flown from North Carolina to Houston for his funeral there on Tuesday. In Washington, D.C., many downtown streets were closed to traffic ahead of demonstrations that were predicted to be the largest yet. By early afternoon, protesters gathered at the Lincoln Memorial, and officials said they were prepared for as many as 200,000 people to join in various marches and events throughout the day. President Trump remained at the White House with no public schedule. And in New York City, protests continued again last night and today. NewsHour Weekend's Christopher Booker has more from Brooklyn, New York.
In the middle of an early evening downpour yesterday, hundreds gathered to protest against police brutality following the death of George Floyd last week at the hands of the Minneapolis police. This march through the South Brooklyn neighborhood of Sunset Park was one of about a dozen protests across the city just yesterday. And rain and the threat of a pandemic did not keep protesters at home.
I have to do something. I can't just stay home and pretend like this isn't happening. Hopefully this brings us closer, stops the violence, especially against people that look like myself and others.
As the peaceful march wound itself through the streets of Brooklyn, past dozens of police officers, we heard what protesters would like to see changed. Jasmine Ramos and Candace Dio were out for the second day in a row.
The system needs to be fixed. We can't have these monsters abusing their uniform.
Right. What is a fix? What people are looking for are specifics. What does change look like to you?
I feel like the training, we should start ruling out these people in training.
There were also signs to defund the police and disarm them, and calls to repeal 50A, the New York State law that protects police personnel records, including misconduct allegations. This march ended at the Metropolitan Detention Center, a federal jail where Jamel Floyd, a 35-year-old black man with no relation to George Floyd, died on Wednesday after corrections officers pepper sprayed him. The Justice Department's Inspector General is investigating the incident. About 2 miles away, two other protests converged and marched together. Organizers stopped after several blocks and then led protesters in song.
Happy birthday, happy birthday to you.
The song was for Breonna Taylor, who would have been 27 on Friday. She was killed by the Louisville police in March when officers executed a no-knock search warrant. Police said they mistakenly believed there were drugs inside. All week, there have been peaceful demonstrations, vigils, and rallies all over the city. But a citywide curfew imposed by Mayor Bill de Blasio on Monday has led police to confront protesters, sometimes with force, across the city.
It's 8 o'clock and the city's curfew has arrived, and the crowd has started to disperse, seeming to avoid conflict with the police for now.
As marchers continued last night, things were mostly peaceful, with many marchers continuing hours past the 8 p.m. curfew without being arrested. But as the night went on, at least a dozen people were arrested around the city. The mayor has faced criticism for not preventing looting and property destruction earlier in the week, and not doing enough to protect peaceful protesters. At a memorial on Thursday for George Floyd, his speech was drowned out by boos. The mayor has pledged the curfew will remain, as originally scheduled, through the weekend.
Christopher Brooker joins us now from Brooklyn, New York. Chris, what did you see this morning?
Well, we're back in Brooklyn at the Grand Army Plaza, where people have started to assemble for what will be a march to City Hall. This is just one of many demonstrations taking place across the entire city.
There's been a lot of criticism about how the New York Police Department dealt with some of the protesters over the last few days. Any developments on that?
Well, last night with us, as we marched through Brooklyn, I will say the police were very much hands-off. Now, this all took place before the curfew. Meanwhile, in the city, they did announce that two officers had been suspended without pay following incidents last week.
This is still happening in the middle of a pandemic. Are the people that you spoke with, are they concerned about that? Do you see uses of masks?
Absolutely. The pandemic is still very much front and center. I mean, you can see just behind me, pretty much everyone is wearing a mask. Now, social distancing was a bit different. You know, the crowd would kind of function like an accordion. As they would march through the streets, they would spread out. But often when they came to speak, they would come back together and then spread back out again. Now, again, this is just an observation. The folks that weren't wearing masks, the police force, you would see some officers wearing masks, but not many. Also, moving through a lot of the protesters were people giving out hand sanitizer, water, and we even came upon a group that was handing out 3D printed face shields. Also, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo announced that it was the civic duty of protesters to get a corona test, and the state actually expanded the criteria for testing to include people that had attended protests.
Christopher Brooker joining us from Brooklyn tonight. Thanks so much.
Thanks.
There were more demonstrations around the world today. Thousands of protesters rallied in London to show solidarity with U.S. demonstrations against police brutality. They chanted no justice, no peace, and called for fair and safe treatment by law enforcement.
Black lives matter!
And in Australia, demonstrators gathered to mourn the death of George Floyd and to protest the deaths of indigenous people held in police custody. The death of George Floyd has sparked international outrage and growing calls for change in law enforcement policies. Two Buffalo, New York police officers pleaded not guilty to charges of second-degree assault today after being suspended and arrested for allegedly shoving an elderly protester. Video captured a 75-year-old demonstrator falling backward and hitting his head on the pavement after walking toward police during a small protest on Thursday. Other officers continued to walk past the injured man before medics arrived. 57 officers on Buffalo's emergency response team have resigned from that team in protest to their fellow officers' suspension, but will remain on the police force. New numbers from the Labor Department yesterday surprised economists when the jobless rate dropped from 14.7% in April to 13.3% in May. Stocks rose, and President Trump called reporters to the Rose Garden to announce the unexpected good news, even though tens of millions of Americans are still out of work. But there was a note on the official report pointing out a, quote, misclassification error, an error that makes last month's unemployment rate as much as 3 points higher. The Wall Street Journal's chief economics commentator Greg Ipp explained what was wrong with the numbers.
So the numbers are a little bit distorted because of the unusual circumstances of the pandemic. People who are on temporary layoff are supposed to be classified as unemployed. For reasons that we're not really sure, a lot of those people were in fact classified as employed. Now, the Bureau of Labor Statistics is aware of that problem. They told us that if you adjust for that error, then the unemployment rate is actually higher. How much higher? Well, in the month of May, it would have been 3 percentage points higher. But in the month of April, it would have been 5 percentage points higher. So what do we take from that? Well, unemployment rose a lot more in April than we thought, but it also fell more in May than we thought.
So when we talk about numbers like 13 or 16%, compare that to where we were just 6 months ago.
I know around January, February, we were down in the 3% area. Now we're dealing with unemployment rates that are the highest since the Great Depression. However, let's put that in context. We had 20% unemployment rates for years back in the 1930s. We've only had these double-digit unemployment rates for a few months. I have to emphasize, we do not have good models for understanding where the economy is going at a time like this. It's just too soon to say how long we'll be dealing with this historic level of unemployment.
Former Vice President Joe Biden now has the delegates needed to be the Democratic Party's nominee for president. The Associated Press estimates Biden has 2,000 delegates, just over the 1,991 needed. The count reflects mail-in ballot returns from 7 states and the District of Columbia, where presidential primaries were held last Tuesday. Yesterday, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell admitted the organization was wrong for not listening to players and condemning racism. The move came one day after several star players released a video demanding the league address racial injustice. Former San Francisco 49ers quarterback Colin Kaepernick started the practice of kneeling down during the national anthem as a protest against police violence. His actions are widely seen as the reason no team has signed him in 4 years. Goodell did not mention Kaepernick, but admitted the NFL was at fault for pushing back against protests.
Without black players, there would be no National Football League. And the protests around the country are emblematic of the centuries of silence, inequality, and oppression of black players, coaches, fans, and staff.
For the latest U.S. and international news, go to pbs.org/newshour. In 1967, the city of Newark, New Jersey, was one of dozens embroiled in race riots across the country. The unrest, driven by segregation, poverty, and economic inequality, came to a head after a black cab driver was arrested for a minor traffic infraction and beaten by two white Newark police officers. More than two dozen people died in the resulting 5 days of riots and protests. The community's relationship with law enforcement remained fraught for decades. So much so that a federal consent decree was issued in 2016 requiring reform throughout the police department. Reform that was tested when more than 10,000 turned out last weekend in the midst of a pandemic to peacefully protest the killing of George Floyd. I spoke with Newark Mayor Ross Baraka about the protests in his city. Mayor Baraka, thanks so much for joining us. Considering that you're a city that has a large black population, considering that we know that there's a disproportionate effect of COVID-19 on African Americans, when you saw what happened to George Floyd, when you saw the reactions that were happening in other cities, what were you thinking of for your own city?
Well, I knew that people were going to protest. I knew something was going to happen. It was so horrific. And there's always a kind of titular moment, a defining moment in history. And just like when Emmett Till was lynched, that wasn't the first time African Americans were lynched, but the sheer nature of that, the visual of that, created such a swell, and the civil rights movement just exploded as a result of that. Same thing with this. As soon as that happened, and you're watching for a full 8 minutes, this guy stand on this guy's neck with no kneeling on his neck with no sense of remorse. You know, I actually told my folks on the phone, we have regular calls because of COVID. I said we need to do a tabletop on police response to what's going on, and in case something like this happens in Newark, how would we respond? But we didn't get a chance to do that tabletop. Our tabletop actually became real because we had a protest immediately the next, probably the day before we were scheduled, 2 days before we were scheduled to do the tabletop.
So what were your suggestions, instructions to police on how to deal with the marchers when they began?
Well, I mean, our police department has been going through a lot, right? You know, we under consent decree. There's a lot of training that we do that other people don't. De-escalation, sensitivity, a trauma-informed training that we do regularly. So we deal with protests a little different. I mean, we allow people to protest. It's not really, so our conversation was basically, we're going to do the same thing we normally do. And the police, public safety director, was in full agreement with that and instructed police officers, our job is to escort, to monitor, to make sure everybody is safe. We're not interested in getting confrontations. In fact, we don't want a lot of police presence. We don't want police cars necessarily around the area if they don't have to be. We were on standby, obviously, if something happened, but that was the instructions, and the police showed incredible, incredible restraint.
How much of a difference does it make when the mayor of the city is standing right behind the front banner of the protest? How does that change the dynamic of what the police will do?
I mean, so people used to me participating and know that I've done things in the past, so it's not like an anomaly to them. It also tempers police officers because they know you're present, and so they're very cautious, and I think it makes them a little bit cautious. And it lets them see what your position is on this, that you agree with what's going on, and they should, you know, act accordingly. And that helps. It also helps in terms of the residents and the people protesting because they feel like, you know, the city is behind them. I think that played a tremendous part in how they behaved.
Were you concerned in the evening? Because a lot of these marches that start out peaceful in the morning, it's sometimes in the evening and the night, they turn into something completely different.
I was concerned in the daytime. when I was out there. And so I just want you to say there were tense moments. It wasn't like just the entire way kumbaya, right? So there were tense moments, different people out there, a lot of anger and outrage, and it should be, right? And, you know, just to be able to channel that in the right way was you know, an incredible and great thing. And nighttime, yeah, I was a little bit more concerned. Obviously, we got support from officers from around the state, so I don't know. They don't go through our training, so they don't know our folks. So obviously, that's a concern for me. They're on the scene. That could turn into anything at any moment, right? At that point, it was two things that I think that saved us. Three, the police, the Newark police that were immediately directly in front of the precinct showed tremendous restraint when people were yelling at them. Even some people started to throw bottles and all kinds of stuff. Did not engage. They stood there and held the line. The community folks who were out there who engaged the protesters very vigorously and told them, listen, don't throw any bottles. Don't do that around here. Take that somewhere else. You're not from my city. They really did an incredible job at that. And they deserve all of the credit, honestly.
Mayor, your city has a special history with this. 50 plus years ago, your dad was on the front lines.
My father was actually hit over the head in the Newark Rebellion. He was actually tried in court. They arrested him for inciting a riot and read one of his poems as proof that he was inciting a riot. So it people know that history, and they know what happened in Newark, that the city went up in flames for 3 or 4 days, and we have more than a dozen people who lost their life in that process. And it took us 50 years to really rebuild, begin rebuilding the city you know, the way we need to. And we still not finished. It's just a protracted struggle. It just means that it takes a period of time. It goes on and on until we get to the place that we need to be. We didn't get in this position in 2 years, and we're not going to get out of it in two.
Mayor Ross Baraka of Newark, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
This week marks the start of Pride Month, the anniversary of a different rebellion that took place 51 years ago when LGBTQ people rioted at New York City's Stonewall Inn after a series of police raids and acts of brutality inside the bar. Now, in the midst of renewed protests against police, a recent wave of killings and violence against black transgender people has many activists calling for trans voices to be centered in calls for Black Lives Matter. NewsHour Weekend's Yvette Feliciano spoke with Imaro Jones, a Soros Equality Fellow and creator of Translash Media.
This is the start of Pride Month. Obviously, it's the 51st anniversary of the Stonewall Rebellion. How does that moment in LGBTQ history connect to this moment we're having right now?
Yeah, not only is it the 51st anniversary of the Stonewall Riot, it's also the 50th anniversary of the first march. So it's also significant in that way. We never would have had a Stonewall if it wasn't for Black trans women saying enough due to police brutality and police misconduct. And the tragedy is that Black trans people have not benefited from the movement that they started. And that means that we cannot replicate that in a moment when the lives of Black people are being centered in a movement that focuses on equality, the ending of police violence, and the centering of Black people's humanity. Black trans women, Black trans people cannot be left out at that moment. We cannot replicate and wait another 50 years for us to be able to try to have some way of creating equality.
Most recently, you've been calling attention to the brutal beating of Ayanna Dior. Can you please describe who she is and what happened to her?
Well, what we know about her is that she is a young Black woman who lives in the Minneapolis-St. Paul region. I believe that the incident took place at a convenience store, actually in St. Paul. We know that there was some kind of altercation over a vehicle, and that ultimately ended up with her essentially being cornered and bum-rushed by a group of, it appears to be more than 10 to 15 people who set upon her in this store. And they were deliberately misgendering her, identifying her as gay, when she's clearly not. And so her gender identity was clearly a part and a driver in the way that she was savagely beaten.
So why is it so important to highlight Iyanna's story? I mean, it was not a police-involved killing. The people seen in the video perpetrating the violence against her are Black. You know, how does this incident fit into this national conversation we're having around Black Lives Matter and police killings?
Because overwhelmingly, when people hit the streets, as we've seen since 2014, it's in the deaths of Black men. And the death of Black men at the hands of police is mythologized due to its long history and attachment with lynching. But it's also really important to understand that Black women were lynched, that Black children were lynched, and that those stories of death at the hands of the police of all Black people are not highlighted, not to mention the death that's caused at the hands of other Black people. So for instance, last summer we had a spate of violence against Black trans women, where in many ways the rage that's being felt and shown on the streets is what I felt for my community, and yet there was not this response, and there's never this response. And this lack of equanimity means that there's not sustained pressure on the systems that oppress us, that we value certain lives more in the community than others. And as long as that's the case, it's very hard to make progress.
We also had the recent killings of Nina Pop in Missouri and Toni McDade in Tallahassee. As a Black trans woman and as a journalist, you know, what has this moment been like for you? Are Black trans voices being centered during these protests?
No. And I think that that's a problem. I think that one of the issues with the what we saw from the video and the way in which Iyanna was treated is that not all Black life, even within the Black community, is valued the same. And there's no way that we're going to be able to transform this moment into one of true liberation until we understand that fact and embrace that fact. One of the things that this incident has raised amongst a lot of Black trans activists is this tension that people feel in this moment of how hard do you take to the streets and fight for people who don't show up for you? There's so many instances when women overall, but specifically Black trans women and our murders and our pain are totally erased by the larger Black community. And that has to end.
Mara Jones, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
That's all for this edition of PBS NewsHour Weekend. For the latest news updates, visit pbs.org/newshour. I'm Hari Srinivasan. Thanks for watching. Have a good night.
PBS NewsHour Weekend is made possible by Bernard and Irene Schwartz, Sue and Edgar Wackenheim III, the Cheryl and Philip Milstein family, Rosalind P. Walter, Barbara Hope Zuckerberg, Charles Rosenblum. We try to live in the moment to not miss what's right in front of us. At Mutual of America, we believe taking care of tomorrow can help you make the most of today. Mutual of America Financial Group, retirement services and investments.
When it comes to wireless, Consumer Cellular gives its customers the choice. Our no-contract plans give you as much or as little talk, text, and data as you want. And our U.S.-based customer service team is on hand to help. To learn more, go to consumercellular.tv.
Additional support has been provided by and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.